Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, June 25th. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening again today, and we welcome back the dream team, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, and Delilah Riggs of the Berry Patch. You have a question about your garden? Oh, we've heard a lot about gophers today and whatnot, groundhogs. They'll come up in the show. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Always a popular show. Call early with your gardening question. You can email voxpop@wamc.org if you wish. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Fred, Delilah, and Greg, and your gardening calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The gardeners are back and ready to take your calls. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, don't you know? And Delilah Riggs is owner and operator of the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. You got a gardening question? Bring it. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Some people have done that. We'll get to the emails in a bit. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Fred, Greg, Delilah, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here. Yeah,
always
for having
good to
us.
Be here.
Yes, indeed.
Greg, you're a little stiff.
A little bit. You know, the walk across the street did wonders.
Really? You feel okay now?
I do, yes.
You should have done some jumping jacks before the show.
Yeah, we had to babysit our grandson for 3 days.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
That'll keep you limber,
yes,
for sure.
Yes, it does. He's only 1.5, and he likes to play on the floor. I haven't been on the floor that long.
Really?
In decades.
It is fun, but you know
That'll
what?
Do
you,
it.
You grow out of it. I had those years, too, and I'm good now. Hey, just a quick shout-out to Bob Graves, who's under the weather, and hopefully he'll be back with us soon. So if you're listening, Bob, we miss you. The number here is 800-348-2551. Can I start with an existential question for all of you?
Sure.
Is gardening worth it? My wife has put blood, sweat, and tears into our garden, and everything's ready to pop. Yesterday, she went out, and the deer got almost all of it.
That's
and
tough.
She is. I said, well, listen, let's put AstroTurf down and fake plants. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think it's worth it for sure. There's
fake plants down?
No. Oh. I mean, my buddy in Jersey would say, yeah. but you know, he's not on the air.
Right.
But definitely worth it. You suffer losses when you do this, but the rewards definitely outweigh those losses for sure.
Yeah.
Long shot.
What would she have done otherwise? With all that time.
I don't know. She's no spring chicken either. You know, she's sore from all the getting down on the ground. And,
sore,
you know, I'm
also
on the couch and I'm sore watching it out the window, you know? Anyway, she was very irritated. But, you know, in fairness, I told her weeks ago, we better get more of that repellent.
Yeah.
We never got around to it.
That is one of the drawbacks, you know. If you just got to do it every week or even twice a week if it's raining, just to let them know. You know they're coming.
Yeah.
I think one of the big questions we get, we're selling a lot more perennials this year, and a lot of people are saying, are any of them deer resistant? And actually, we have chosen ones that are, what I say on our descriptors is they are said to be deer resistant. Because I've learned that just like people, individual deer have specific tastes.
Yeah. Well, these guys like a lot of things. It's kind of like a golden corral at my backyard, I'll tell you that.
And also one of the good things, usually, I mean, it depends on exactly what it is, but everything will grow back and look good just a little bit later.
Now, she said something, and I promise we'll get to the emails here in a moment. It's enough about us. But she said, maybe I'll just do all annuals next year. The deer don't like them that much. Is that true or not true?
Well, sometimes. Again, from my experience, deer's diets have changed a lot over the years. Things that we used to say were deer resistant or deer, you know, nay, never touch it.
Yeah.
We've come to say, well, you know, like hydrangea, for example, that one never used to get hit nearly as bad. Now it's one of the more favored ones that we planted at the
Isn't
arboretum.
Isn't that interesting? So, taste change, huh?
So they do tend to change.
And that's also one that, you know, depending on the selection, I'm sure we'll get some questions, would bounce back with some early pruning. If the deer have eaten it this month, they'll, you know, those panicle hydrangeas in particular will still bloom next month.
Yep. Okay. And we've been using Milorganite lately, just in general. And I used to use it years ago, and it almost seemed like they got used to it.
What was it called?
It's a type of fertilizer called Milorganite, and it just has a kind of a foul odor. I mean, I don't like the odor either. We used it for years. It seemed to be like, they got used to it. Now we've taken years off, and now we've used it again, and it seems like, boy, they're not touching anything.
Oh, interesting.
We've got daylilies blooming that we haven't had in years over at the arboretum.
You know, if the deer could only learn to eat each other, we wouldn't have a problem, you know?
and you know, some kind of physical barrier. Fencing does work. You know, it's a good job for someone to do in the beginning.
Why are you pointing to me?
You only have to do it once.
Okay. Listen, one of my neighbors when I was a kid dropped dead putting in a fence for his wife. I'm not doing that.
He's not taking no chances.
The Mets are on, and they stink. All right, here's an email from Jenny. I heard that the very old oak tree in Sherwood Forest died, and they're going to preserve it. How is that done? Will they inject it with something and coat the outside? I don't understand how it won't rot. Also, that tree must have a lot of children, LOL. That's from Jenny.
Yep. So
have you heard about this?
I absolutely have, yeah. So it's the Robin Hood Oak.
Right.
Yep. And, you know, the lore says that him and his merry men hid in this thing during, you know, their tenure
right.
over in that part of the world. And it has passed away. It failed to leaf out this year. So it's very recent.
Yeah.
Preserving it, they're actually, from what I understand, they're going to leave the tree intact and let it kind of naturally decompose. So it's not preserved as in it's not going to rot. It's going to rot and feed a huge ecosystem of all kinds of critters over years. It's going to be habitat for years. And yes, it absolutely guaranteed had children out there as well.
Yeah. Right,
that forest.
I heard it was a 36-foot circumference.
It's right around that. It's in the 30s.
36 feet.
Yeah, it's
that's
in the 30s.
The size of this room.
Yeah, and it's definitely in the 30s. It's estimated to be over 1,000 years old, that oak.
I take it all you have been to California, right?
Yes.
I've only been to the northwest and have never made it down that far. The redwoods, how big are they in diameter?
So the largest in the world is about almost 29 feet diameter.
So the Robin Hood
diameter.
Oh, okay. You're talking circumference on the Robin
Hood. On the Robin Hood. Uh-huh. 29 feet diameter.
So it's
called Captain Jack Sparrow. The widest.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding. I know the guy that I know some people that actually found this tree. So friends.
Did they get to name it? Is it like the star registry?
The rule is if you're the discoverer of the tree, you get to name it.
Okay, fair enough. Interesting. 800-348-2551 is Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. And this one is from Skit, NPK Nutrients. Brief explanation of what they are, how they affect growing, how to pick the right ratio of NPK in fertilizer. What's that?
Well,
there's a whole course right there.
That's a whole show.
Okay. Yep. Well, you have 1 minute.
Yeah. So NPK is nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
Yeah.
They're the three what are called macronutrients that are needed in the largest quantities by plants. Mm. And the ratio, there's lots of different ratios out there. I always just tell people that for general growing, a nice balanced fertilizer, so 10-10-10, 15-15-15, something along those lines is best to use. You don't really need specialized different types of formulas unless you've got specific growing situations.
Yep. And then most of the organic ones have just smaller numbers, but the ratios are the same. So just the numbers are maybe in the 6-5-4-3 range, but the ratios are the same. And 99% of the time, at least in Western Mass, when someone brings in a soil test document from the extension, the only thing that's missing is nitrogen.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Which is used in the greatest quantity of all the elements. But micronutrients are extremely important too. So when we do fertilizing, we do say use complete fertilizers, which is NPK, macronutrients, plus micronutrients and trace elements. Because even though it's needed in a very small amount, it's still needed.
Fred, over at the Landis, do you use organic or the other?
We go organic fertilizers, yep.
Why?
Well, I think overall, I think we get a better result with growth. Number one, they're also longer lasting. So when you put it down, it takes a while for the plant takes a while for that nutrient to become available, and it feeds for a longer period of time. So if you did something that's not organic, not saying it wouldn't work well, it seems to work real well for us. And like I said, a longer feeding time and real hard to burn something with organic too.
Yeah, that's what I would say. That probably one of the biggest issues is that they're much safer to use. Yeah. You can't really overdo it.
It's hard to overdo.
So it's the same stuff in greater quantity in the non-organic.
Yep.
All right. Yes. One more email here, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. 800-348-2551 is the number, and the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Jay writes in, what are the choices of trees, shrubs that top out about 10 feet tall, 4 feet wide, no or low maintenance?
Well, there's a lot. Another show dedicated to that one. But I'll just throw a couple out there. Spice bush, I like that one. That's a native.
Yeah,
it's a really good one.
I think most of the deciduous woody shrubs that you can think of would top out at that size. So all of the viburnums, many of those hydrangeas, things like, lilac, forsythia. There's just a lot of shrub form things that
witch hazel.
Yeah, witch hazel.
Yep.
I know they're considered invasive now, but we have up on our hill a burning bush that's got to be 10 feet. We didn't plant it. They've just been there. Yep. And it's beautiful. I love it.
And those top out around 10 feet as well.
And you can't do that anymore, huh?
They don't they don't sell them anymore because of the invasive qualities.
Or New York. I believe if you live in Connecticut, you may be able to still plant them.
Okay. Well, before we take a break, Dale Isla, what the blue blazes is in the jar?
Yeah, so, last year during tomato time, I brought in this great big scary-looking green hornworm.
Oh, I remember that. Looked delicious.
And our tomatoes are starting to ripen now, so I thought it was appropriate that last night when I was crawling around under some exclusion netting in my melons, this guy almost attacked me, which is a sphinx moth.
Oh, my gosh, the most noble of all moths.
Yes. And it is what lays eggs that then hatch and turn into the tomato hornworm.
Ah.
So since our tomatoes are starting to ripen in our greenhouse now, I always want to know when these adults are starting to fly, because pretty soon we start hopefully finding little hornworms. So we get them when they're little rather than when they're 3 inches long and 3/4 of an inch in diameter.
So with these moths, you just suffocate them individually?
I don't normally catch very many. So I just was able to catch this one. He was fluttering around, and I thought, you're going in a jar.
Can't you let him fly free, though, before he kicks? You have holes in there?
No, I don't have holes in there. I might release it here in Albany. I'm just not going to release it on my own farm.
Release it in the newsroom. I got to see this. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Gardening Today. We'll hit the phones in a moment. All right, so I've been on a Frank West Thad Jones kick lately. There's Liz, and so sue me. I love this stuff. 800-348-2551 is the number. Ray Graff with you. It's Gardening Today. Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and it looks like Fred is in Suffield, Connecticut. Fred, what's happening?
Hi. I have a Japanese yew hedge. It's at the front edge of our property. It's maybe about 3 feet back from the street. Very old. It's been there since 1960, about 8 feet tall, about 6 feet wide. And this winter, I think the town changed the formula of what they were putting on the roads. So it sustained just a ton of winter damage on the front side. It's mostly brown up to the top. I don't think I have much choice except to go in and cut out as much of that as I can manage.
Mm.
Just want to make sure that's the thing to do. But my bigger question, is there anything I can do to protect it so that this doesn't happen again?
So for next winter, it might not be pretty, but some kind of material, a burlap screen, maybe some traditional snow fence first, and then something that's a little less porous than that to keep whatever the splash residue is off of the plants and as high as you need to go. That would be number one. So what's happening is the salts in the solution, right, is sort of what is sticking to the needles and it's burning the needles. So when you're thinking of pruning, I would just, it's, you know, here it is, mid, late June, things have grown. I would look at any of those stems that have the brown needles and see if there's any new growth coming out of there, if there's any buds at all. Because if there is, they will flush out and you may not need to prune them out.
Yeah, and the good thing about yews is that yews do regenerate from older wood. So junipers don't. If that was a juniper hedge, you would be in, you know, harder to get it to look good again. But if, just like Greg said, if you do see some new growth, you may not need to cut too much off because they will regenerate. And if you scratch it, you should see nice green under that bark as well.
Fred.
That's great. Thank you.
You got it. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. Gardening Today, Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia to answer your questions. Let's go to Milan. It's Colleen. Hello, Colleen. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. Pretty good, you know?
Well, my squirrels are doing pretty good, too, because they're in all my pots. They're in all my raised beds. They're digging holes everywhere.
Good heavens.
I know you guys don't recommend coffee grounds on plants, but I heard that they hate coffee grounds, so I've been stuffing the holes with coffee grounds.
Yeah.
And sprinkling hot pepper on top of that, and they just keep coming. What do you guys recommend?
Well, we were hoping what you said was going to work.
Yes, we were. That hot pepper sometimes can be a deterrent, but they can be persistent.
Yeah. I mean, there are pepper mixes with bird seed that apparently do work, but maybe,
ooh,
you know, but I wouldn't, I guess you could try that.
But that's for bird feeders,
I know, it doesn't
right?
really
that's
make sense.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't want to deter the bird, right. But...
No, the birds can't.
No, the birds will eat it. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you reapplying right after like rains and stuff like that too?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You know what? I swear to God, I got a cheaper brand of cayenne pepper the other day. I'm wondering if it's just too cheap for these guys or something. But you know, I got to go to a better store.
There are some other repellents. I'm not suggesting that I could guarantee they work, but there are some other repellents you might be able to get at your local garden center or hardware store for rodent-like garden creatures. They usually have various things.
Stinky one
in them.
I tried.
These are like, this would be a granular thing. This would be sort of like a little, you know, a little cat litter clay material that has been soaked in a few things, and you would sort of, you could sprinkle that on top of the pots to see if that was effective. I can't think of any brand names. Not sure if I could mention them anyway, but they are for, you know, they deter chipmunks or rabbits or woodchucks or whatever. And so I think squirrels might be on the list as well.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going to look for that granular stuff.
And it might be worth it to try Mulorganite. I mean, it's not, I don't know about its efficacy.
I heard you guys talking about that earlier.
Yeah, I mean, we've been having pretty good luck with it. Over the last year or so at the Arboretum, and it seems to have some repellency for rabbits because we know that rabbits are feeding in certain areas, and those seem to be going, you know, kind of staying away. Again, it's a reapply thing, too.
All right.
But it might be worth a shot.
All right, Colleen, good
luck.
Yeah,
I used that a couple of years ago for deer.
Thanks a lot for the call.
I'll let you guys know.
Don't buy
a house surrounded by walnut trees. Just take my advice on that one.
All right. Please fill us in how you're doing with that. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. All right, we got a wiseacre in the newsroom. His name is Lucas Willard, I'll be honest with you. And he's been having a heck of a time with groundhogs, okay? He's got a nice new house, and the groundhogs are eating everything. So he tried throwing garlic into the hole. He tried water. They keep coming back, just digging more holes now. And frankly, he's losing his mind.
Yeah, so used kitty litter.
What?
Yep.
Well, I can give him that.
Yeah, there you go.
It definitely deters him from the holes.
$10 a bag, Lucas.
Yeah. So predatory things, you know, thrown into the hole are supposed to be a good deterrent.
That is amazing. All right. Well, that's a good try.
Yep.
800-348-2551 to Ballston Lake, and it's Pat's turn. Go ahead.
Hi.
Thanks
for taking my call.
You bet.
Can you hear me?
Sure.
Okay, I'm pulling over. My neighbors have this white birch tree that's been growing. They put it in a couple years ago. and it's probably about 25 to 30 feet. Maybe it has a 4-inch base. This year, just within the last week, all the leaves have turned brown. The trunk in the tree is still alive, but all the trees are brown.
All the leaves are brown on this tree, you're
don't
saying?
Don't sing the song.
Oh, boy, I'm not going to sing.
Don't do
Trust
it.
Me, I'll spare
all
us. We're not singing. Fine. You know, it might be a birch borer. I would encourage you to look at the stem on this tree, and if you might see other holes, but if it's a bronze birch borer, then it's a flat-headed borer, and if you look at the hole, it'll look like sort of like a letter D, only it'll be rotated so that the round part is on the bottom and the flat part is on top, flat-headed. He comes out that way. If you see the hole, that means that the insect already went through an entire life cycle and chewed his way out, and that would be, you know, definitely one of the big causes, especially for paper birch.
Usually when that happens, the entire tree doesn't go. Usually you have a few green branches. There's nothing up there that looks good still.
The branches and the trunk is good. They're still alive. The leaves, all the leaves are brown.
Yeah, I suspect on a 4-inch tree, if you had bronze birch borer, it wouldn't take too much to take that out. And, you know, you wouldn't notice it. And if that's the case, then it's, you know, unless there's a lower branch on a tree that is still alive and has leaves, if one comes out, then you could try to retrain the tree from a branch. But otherwise, probably not looking too good.
Right. Because it's
okay. Look
it's
for
been...
the bronze borer beetle. Okay.
Yeah. And you won't see the beetle. You'll find the holes, and you'll find other holes on birch a lot of times. So like sapsucker, there's a bird that hits it pretty good. They'll make holes in a row. So it's not that. It's an isolated hole, and it definitely has a flat top.
And sometimes there's that little serpentine raised, sort of thinner than a pencil. Raised aspect to the trunk, so it which is basically where the borer was. It was tunneling through, but it was kind of pushing up the bark because it's essentially, you know, girdled the tree, and so that's why those leaves died.
Yeah, and it's the larva that's eating the tree, and then it pupates and then turns into the, you know, the insect that chews its way out.
Pat, thanks a lot for the call. It's 800-348-2551. Gardening Today with Greg Ward. Almost said Bob Graves. Bob, I hope you're listening. Dale Isla Riggs and Fred Breglia. And let's see. Let's go to Pattersonville. John, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm calling to ask about how to maintain an asparagus bed. It's an old one. I planted the seeds about 35 years ago. I've been getting great asparagus every year. But over the years, I'm going to call it morning glories, but it's something like that has moved in, and I just can't get them out. I weed and weed and weed, and it seems like if you pull up one, you get three. Any suggestions?
Okay. Yeah, so it sounds like you probably have field bindweed in there, which is a really difficult weed to take care of. I think you might want to consider relocating that asparagus bed. Or at least relocating some of the crowns for a few years. See if you can then tarp that area that has so much bindweed, smother it with some black tarps or something so that the bindweed cannot photosynthesize. And a couple years of doing that will certainly help take it out quite a bit. But field bindweed and asparagus is really tough because it doesn't have a thick canopy to help shade weeds during the summer. So if there's a place that you can relocate those crowns to while you get that area cleaned up or just start anew in a different spot, since you've got healthy crowns, you could probably just get started in a new area.
And so making a new bed and moving and then transplanting the crowns bare root without any bindweed attached.
Correct.
And what's the best time for that?
Usually you plant asparagus crowns early spring. I would get the new bed established this year, have it covered over the winter so you don't get any winter perennials or winter annuals coming up, and then get your asparagus crowns moved into it in the spring.
John.
Dig them up and move it then.
Bindweed is just so tough. Unless it's wild buckwheat, which is not as difficult to get rid of, but It sounds like it's probably field bindweed if it looks like Morning Glory.
And if it's a big bed and you have
Morning Glory flowers, that's why I call it that.
But if it's a really big bed, you could move some of it for next year, you know, and I mean, or over the winter or, you know, in the spring, and leave your original bed intact to harvest from until the second bed gets established.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
That bindweed is a Morning Glory family plant. So that's, you know, that's why it looks like that.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs join us today here on Vox Pop Gardening. And to Peterson Mash, David, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a suggestion about the deer repellent.
Splendid. Okay, go ahead.
Well, after, you know, I got 30-plus years of farming, and I've always dealing with deer.
Right.
Especially on some of my potato crops. I put about 300-400 pounds of seed potato in the ground every year, and I always have deer issues wanting to eat the foliage. So I've been spraying 1 cup of milk, 1 tablespoon of Dawn dish soap, and an egg mixed up in a blender, and that goes to 1 gallon of water. So if you want to increase that, that's the initial mix, though. And I tell you, the deer, they stay away from the foliage.
Fascinating.
So that might work for other applications, too.
Well, Greg, go ahead.
Yeah, and how often do you make that application? How often do you spray them?
I spray them once a week, rain or not.
Yep.
But they're starting to flower now. My potatoes are starting to flower now, and they've got enough foliage on them where it's not a big deal. That, you know, if the deer comes in and takes a little bit, I don't really care. But in the beginning, I mean, they'll decimate. They'll walk down a row, and like this year, they ate all my red Norland tops and my blue mountain tops. There's certain years they go after different potatoes, but, you know, 1 egg, 1 cup of milk, a tablespoon of Dawn dish soap, put it through the blender. I really think putting it through the blender and really mixing it up, and that goes to 1 gallon of water. So you can, you know, make, I usually make 3 gallons of it in my backpack sprayer and walk the rows. I've had great success.
All right, now listen, I have a question. I'm not a gardener. I don't know anything about anything. But do you want to spray all that stuff on the taters if you're going to eat them?
Yeah.
On the foliage, the tubers, they haven't really formed yet when you're spraying it in the beginning. It's basically, I'd say, in the first 3-4 weeks. And, I mean, Dawn dish soap, the egg, milk. I've never had anybody complain about the taste of the potatoes.
Okay,
so.
Anybody else? All right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think that is sort of the classic mix of what you would purchase from, you know, in a commercial product. They might have a few other things in there. They might put some hot pepper in there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But egg is often the dominant thing. Yep. The soap is there as a binder to help it stick to the foliage. The milk has some potential to repel as well once it's sort of gone a little rancid, probably. So it's these proteins that are really deterring the animals.
Right.
Now, would I put it on my potatoes or my tomato plant if it was early?
Yeah.
Yes. Would I spray my basil with it?
Probably
not.
Okay, fair enough.
No. And we've used that at the arbor as well over the years. Yeah. And we've, in fact, got a recipe on that on our website.
Well, you
it's called Deer Begone, we call it.
The deer repellent, the deer rabbit repellent, which smells, I assume, just like that.
Yep.
It's not cheap. You know, if you can make it yourself.
No. Yep.
Although it's a little bilious to put that in your blender, but Fred, you put worse in your blender.
Well, you know, I have 2 blenders.
Yeah,
one's the wife's.
One's the devil's blender. Yeah, we've had that conversation before. All right, one more call here, then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the email bag again. It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs, and let's go to our buddy in Schenectady. It's Joan. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Ray. Thanks for this wonderful show. I'm loving it, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I really can use your help today. Late yesterday afternoon, concerns broke out in my shared apartment building that a friend wanted to just rip up all of the tiger lilies, convinced that they were imminently harmful to cats. I suggested, are you thinking day lilies instead of tiger lilies? They're slightly different plants. And do you have any thoughts on this?
Tiger lilies.
Boy, do I wish this had happened before the vet show was on, you know?
Well, I can answer that. Tiger lilies are actually harmful to cats.
Really?
They are. There's like some kind of toxin in there. I think all parts of it actually are.
Do they normally spring up in the Northeast?
But they're all over the place. Some people call them ditch lilies.
Yeah.
They're all over the place. So, you know? But generally, these animals know better in most cases.
Right.
I mean, like we've talked on past shows, daffodils, toxic
really?
To animals. But you know what? Animals don't really browse. You don't have to spray the Herbigon on your daffodil. They know it. Most of these animals, the wild ones, have figured it out.
So tiger lilies and day lilies, we're talking about, these are the same things. They're all actually a day lily. So just to clear the, in case everyone's wondering, they're the same.
All right.
Ditch lilies are a type
of day
lily. But
this one's the natural, the native plant with the long, long leaves.
Yeah,
and the bright orange flower. That's the one.
I don't think
that technically almost got dug up yesterday.
Any of them are native, Joan, but they are. Yes, that you find them where they've colonized a little bit, usually from getting moved to that spot.
Yeah, they're naturalized.
Okay,
but they're not. Thing. Yeah, they're naturalized, but not native.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right,
that's
Joan.
Important. Okay.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Speaking of things moving in, we have a sunflower. In our front yard. We've never planted them.
Wow. Congratulations.
And some bird or something must have brought up the sunflower. It hasn't made the full flower yet, but it's coming up.
Almost guaranteed, probably out of a wild bird food mix.
Isn't
almost guaranteed.
Isn't nature wonderful?
It's cool when you get those surprises, for sure.
I highly recommend you put some repellent on that.
Oh, that's a great idea.
They see it, they're going to love it.
I'll have a word with my gardener. Okay. The number here is 800-348-2551. Fred, Greg, Dale Isley, your calls, and we'll check the email bag for a few right after this. Sonny Rollins here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. The number, email is voxpop@wamc.org. Before we get to the email bag, Dale Isla Riggs, you're a regular at the Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, right?
We are, 17 years now.
Well,
and you know that there's a big WAMC hoo-ha coming up on Saturday.
I do know that, and I'm looking forward to it.
And we have Aaron Shello Levine right here, who's one of the big wigs who's going to be alive and on the radio. You excited for this, Aaron?
Oh, it should be great.
Yeah?
We'll be live. I think it's 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. talking. I'll be going out into the crowd grabbing folks, bringing them back to our booth. I think some other folks will be grabbing vendors. Not that you guys aren't real people.
Don't grab Dale Isla.
No, of course not. No. But bringing them back to the booth, it should be an incredible community moment. We're going to be talking all about the First Amendment, the power and importance of public radio within the community. I am super stoked. I was going to be at the farmers market anyways, so, you know, might as well go wearing all of my WAMC merch.
It's so exciting. And as a fossilized member of the staff here, it's great to see literally all the young'uns going to do a
It'll
live remote. It's going to be awesome. Dale Isla, they'll probably try to get you on the mic.
I think I can handle that.
You know what? I think you can. All right. Well, thank you, Aaron. This email from Liz in Verona. You ever been to Verona?
No. Where's that one?
Oh, out Utica, beyond Utica. Great casino out that way.
I was going to say, isn't that where there's
by.
A casino?
Oh, the wife and I spent a couple lovely days there for our 25th anniversary. It was fantastic. Liz writes, I transplanted 3 peony plants and haven't had any bloom since. Small buds appear, but never evolve into flowers. Is the depth the issue?
It certainly could be.
We
always talk about peonies needing to be pretty shallow. A lot of times I've seen this happen a lot where people transplant peonies and they just don't. It's easy to get more soil on top and get them a little deeper than they were.
Yeah.
So lifting them up is definitely going to be the key.
When they form a bud and it turns black and doesn't get any bigger than, you know, a dime, that's usually exactly what it is.
Uh-huh. All right. Father Tony writes in, regular correspondent, help. Can anything be done to help this sickly tree? Oh, he sent a link. Father Tony, you should know better. I think it's a hemlock. I lost one about 2 years ago. I have to tap to download this. I'm violating my own rule because Father Tony is a good dude. All right, so what is this, Fred? You're the tree guy. See, the thing is, pictures don't work that well on radio. That's the real thing.
Yeah, so that looks like a hemlock.
Okay, it's sickly.
It's not looking too good. It very well may have, you know, it could have woolly adelgid. It's hard to say from here, but that would be my first guess.
Okay.
It's just one of the leading causes of hemlock decline right now.
All right.
And it's certainly prevalent. If you catch it early, it's in a landscape, very treatable.
It's too late now for this one?
I wouldn't say it's too late. You know, it's got some green on it still, but it's, you know, it's stressed and it has been going for a while. It's a very thin crown.
So treating it, it could also be some spruce scale in there as well, right?
Could
that
be.
Will also thin them out. And treating them with an insecticide that's topical, such as a horticultural oil or insecticidal soap, can be very effective.
All right. James in Norwalk, Connecticut writes, "We have a beloved mature Japanese plum tree. It's afflicted with black knot for a couple of years now. I understand it'll eventually kill the tree. Any effective way to cure it?"
Yeah, unfortunately, that one's not a good, no good answer on that one. It's not curable. Black knots are really bad. Another fungal, there's a fungal problem. Unlike the hemlock, which is an insect, this one's fungal. And it affects a lot of members of the Prunus genus. Cherries get it too. And, you know, the only thing we recommend is prune them out and discard that wood. Don't put it on your property and sterilize the pruner after every single cut with rubbing alcohol, because if you make a cut, you could spread that around very easily. So you prune them out, get it off. You can burn it in a burn barrel or, you know, fire, or get it off site, garbage bag, and then just keep after them. But eventually it will, unfortunately, the fungus will win.
All right. Mac writes in from West Hampton. Is there a West Hampton? Yep. Greg, you're the Massachusetts guy.
Yep.
Okay.
West Hampton, Northampton.
He hyphenated it, and I wasn't sure. What can I do to prevent, lessen, or eliminate powdery mildew if it appears? If the deer don't get the plants, this stuff always does. And that's from Mac in West Hampton.
Well, that's great timing, because to control, you know, usually, you know, sort of topical fungi, you make the applications before you see any, you know, any signs of it. So if you've had a perennial issue with powdery mildew, applying a fungicide that will control powdery mildew before it shows up on the leaves, that would be starting now, and applying it weekly or every 10, 14 days would work really well.
All right, so one more email here, and then we'll go back to the phones. It's Gardening Today with Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, and Fred Breglia. The number is 800-348-2551. Last email for now from Eileen in Colony. Is there a bad time to take a chainsaw to my hedges? The hedges in front of my house have grown to twice their usual size. In short, they're tall. It's hard to throw shoveled snow from the sidewalk over them. They seem very hardy. Is it safe to just cut them in half at this time of year, or should it happen in spring just as they're waking up? Please don't beat around the bush. I'm hedging my bets on how to handle this. Eileen, I hope you didn't stay up late working on the hilarity. All right, what do you think?
It's not a good time to cut those plants back super hard. If she's talking about rejuvenation pruning, which means, you know, kind of taking them right down to the ground, that would be bad. Selective pruning now certainly could be done. You could certainly take out 30% of that plant.
Yeah, and it would really be nice to know what they are.
It would be nice to know
that. A whole lot further than that.
But, yep.
You know, deciduous things, you know, if it's privet or something, you know, that works really well. If it's your favorite plant, burning bush, they don't usually recover too well from getting topped.
No,
why
they
do you
don't.
Think it's my favorite plant?
I don't know. You said you liked it.
Well, I like a lot of plants. I mean, they look good from a distance, right? You don't want to get too close.
One of your favorite plants is, you know, burning bush.
Fine.
And
all right. Well, okay. Well, let's go to Rensselaer. Why don't we do that? Richard, you're on.
Last spring, I planted some potato eyes in pots. And they did well for about 6 weeks, and then they started rotting from the ground up. So what was causing that?
They stayed in pots?
Yes.
Yeah, I have to wonder if maybe they got too much water. And they rotted in the pot. Yeah, because if you grow them in the ground, if it's decent soil, unless we have a whole lot of rain, usually that water will drain away. But in a pot, people can get a little overzealous in the watering. And I just have to wonder if maybe they got watered too heavily.
All right, Gretchen.
Okay.
Thanks a million for the call. 800-348-2551. Very quickly, Carrie O'Loughlin, who was on yesterday on the Pets and Vets show, wrote in, I agree with Fred. Daylilies are toxic to cats, but I've never heard of a cat eating one. I've owned dozens of cats and have tons of daylilies around my house. I wouldn't be concerned about it.
And I have a cat that gave birth to three kittens in the middle of a daylily patch.
Oh, wow. Isn't that cute?
And you can eat daylily buds. People can.
Yeah.
Do you, Fred?
You know, not those particular ones. Not saying that you can't, but I do go for culinary gourmet.
Yeah.
as you know. So,
yes, I do.
You know, there's better things out there, I think, that you could probably fry up or saute.
We have a lot of daylilies, too, and Mitchell never is bothered by it at all.
Yeah, and I grew up in a house with cats,
I've eaten them a few times, sautéed them.
Really?
Yeah. But it's been a while now. But, yeah, they're you know, like all those kinds of things. Interesting. Salt and pepper.
You know, over the years, we've found out a lot of things Fred will eat. And, Greg, you now have said that you've eaten daylilies.
Yes.
Is there anything Fred has mentioned eating from the woods that you would never touch or tried and hated?
You didn't say you ate the Japanese beetles, right?
No.
Oh, God.
I did not eat them.
So, no. No, I think everything he's mentioned that he ate, I would have eaten as well.
Do people eat Japanese beetles?
Well, I wasn't sure.
Okay.
Wasn't sure.
All right. Let's just move on. Drea's in Troy. Drea, go ahead.
Hi. This question is for Fred Breglia. Huh. I went to your plant sale earlier in the year, and I brought a twig of my Rose of Sharon that had not leafed out at the time.
Yep.
And it still had green on the twig.
I remember that. Yep.
Yeah, the twigs still have some green in them. This tree has not leafed out yet. All my two other roses of Sharon are in full leaf. They're starting to get buds, all that stuff. Is this a...
Well, we lost that word.
Is it dead, or is it... Should I wait until next year?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to come back if you don't have any leaves on that plant at this stage of the game. I'd say you're probably looking at a takedown. It caused either winter damage, something caused it, and it had stored energy, but it didn't have enough to put out new buds and then grow. So I think it's safe to say you could probably replace that one now.
All right.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you so much.
Hey,
enjoy the show.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Becky in Canaan. Becky, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling about a rhododendron tree. I moved into my house about 40 years ago, and there were beautiful rhododendron bushes right outside my kitchen window. They were just gorgeous, three different colors. They have grown so big that they took my house. Flowers are above my roof.
The flowers are above your roof. Well, at least yours flowers. Ours doesn't flower.
It's a two-story house.
Wow, what do you think? Yeah.
So is there a way to prune it or somehow force the flowers lower?
It sounds like you might need some help if they're that tall. And so you might want to talk to some kind of landscape contractor, arborist, someone who is, good at pruning, because reducing them is the way to go. Probably reducing them over the course of a few years would be recommended so that you don't take it all out at once.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, exactly. I've taken huge, I've pruned rhododendrons that are literally like you say, up to the roof lines. And that's a great thing because that means it's very happy.
Right.
And a lot of people struggle with getting, rhododendrons to look that good or do that good for that many years. So, but they can be reduced very easily. It does take a little bit of skill when they're getting that big. So, you don't want to just haphazardly, cut them. But reduction pruning is the way to solve that.
Right.
Is that technically a tree? Would you call an arborist?
An arborist certainly could deal with woody plants and shrubs, so that's not, certainly could deal with that and reduce it for her, but it technically not a tree.
Okay.
But in Carolinas, you would say that they look like small understory trees.
Yeah.
I've mountain biked through 15-foot tall rhododendrons. So
if we can't get ours, we can't get flowers on
ours.
Yeah,
pH is a big part of it, though. You know, it's real happy pH where she's at.
Well, you want to follow up, Becky?
No, that's great. So it is possible. I didn't want to start the routine if it wasn't even possible.
Yep, very possible. And for that plant, they work. It works really well on it, especially when you got a healthy ones like you.
All right. Well, you know, our rhododendron has now developed little holes, round holes, and sometimes at the edge of the leaves.
You know what that is?
What is it?
The new leaves or the old leaves?
It's probably the weevil.
Is this a trick question?
Because so they look like notches.
Yep.
Yeah.
Weevils.
Weevils?
Weevils.
How do you get rid of the weevils?
They come out at night. Put a trail cam out if you want to see
them. Are they animals?
No, they're insects. Okay. They're like a beetle. Okay. Looks like a beetle.
And so what would I do?
I'm trying to think of the life cycle, but it's the adults are not really the problem. There are larvae in the soil feeding on the root system.
Wow.
And that could also be weakening the tree.
Darn it.
You know, there are some insecticidal drenches you could do. And so looking into that, so you're going to, you'd make it up and then you would water the root system with those products.
Okie doke. Yeah. Let's go to Charles in Old Chatham. Charles is on line 10. Charles, go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. So I have a swamp milkweed growing around my pond and I've planted it. I've bought perennials. I've actually bought plants. I've also grown it from seed. Recently, it's been growing up to flower, and then as soon as it's about to flower, like the next day I come out and it's just like drooped from the top, looking dead and just kind of falling apart, just inexplicably. It's planted in pretty wet soil. I don't really know what I'm doing wrong, if it's like a bug or a wilt or something. I do have other types of milkweed, but this only happens to my swamp milkweed. I'm curious if you all have any suggestions?
Yeah, I have not seen that happen before. It does sound like, either like an insect, most likely, if they're looking really fresh one night and then terrible the next, some kind of decapitation, basically, some kind of boring or biting of the tissue below that, possibly. If you want to send a couple of photos of that, we can look into that a little more. I mean, that's what I would do, is just see if you can identify it, as a specific thing that other people have witnessed before.
Charles,
the only other thing you could consider is, you know, obviously it's still pretty early and they should bloom again, is just pruning all those back for a second flush.
Yeah. Okay.
And then hopefully they will miss that cycle.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's very good. Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Charles. Appreciate it. Couple emails here, and then we'll wrap it up. Pat writes in, asparagus weeding. Asparagus is a saltwater plant. You can sprinkle road salt. It'll kill weeds, and asparagus will love it. I ran an Agway for 45 years and sold it every year. And that's from Pat. Anybody?
That is something that has been traditionally recommended that we have heard. I don't have any particular experience with that. Dale?
Yeah, I have no experience with it at all. I do worry about getting too much salt in your soil.
Yeah.
And that the damage that might cause to other things.
Okay.
Which, if you're trying to get rid of weeds, that might be fine, but I don't have any personal experience with it.
All right, Deb writes in, groundhog solution? I called but hung up, so sorry. I've used sonar stakes, have two new raised gardens that were devastated by groundhogs that jumped from my stairs into my gardens, destroying over 50 plants. Have replanted and increased my fencing to mimic Stalag 13. LOL. Well, thank you, Deb, for that one. However, since putting in the stakes, have not seen any chipmunks, moles, or groundhogs. Anybody know what a sonar stake is?
Yeah, they're these. I think it's the same thing as these little vibrating. The sonar must be a noise. Must be make a sound. Actually.
I think it's a really high pitched noise that we can't hear.
Yeah. Ah. Okay, so that's interesting.
Yeah, they use it for mice, sometimes mouse repellents for homes, too.
And science, there is some science that says that doesn't work, but we've used them, and it does work.
Yep. We've had mixed results at Landis.
What happens is the plant, they get used to it.
I think they get used to it.
Yeah.
Yep. So initially, it's like the Milorganite. You know, we rotate. Sometimes we do Deer Be Gone, the homeopathic recipe there, with the eggs and the milk and stuff, and it works. But then they started to get used to things. And like I said, Milorganite,
the high-pitched frequency? How you get used to that?
I don't know. I know when we first put it in at the ARB many years ago, it seemed to have it was pretty effective. And then over time, we started seeing a lot of evidence of mice, and we got rid of it. So maybe bring it back, rotate these things.
Fred, how do people find the Landis Arboretum?
Yeah, we're located at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York, and our website is landisarboretum.org.
Dale Isla, The Berry Patch.
TheBerryPatch.net. We're on Route 22 in Steventown, and the farm store and pick your own blueberries should be starting up in a couple weeks.
Cool. And you'll see Aaron Shella Levine and the gang Saturday at the Troy Waterfront Farmers
Market.
We
absolutely will.
All right. Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yeah. Ward's Nursery is in Great Barrington at 600 South Main Street, or wardsnursery.com.
All right, folks. This was a fun one today. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Support comes from Berkshire Stage Company in the Berkshires, presenting Driving Miss Daisy with Deborah Jo Rupp at the 62 Center in Williamstown, June 28th through July 5th. Tickets at barringtonstageco.org. And Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care for seniors, offering them opportunities to live at age gracefully with dignity and respect. Daughtersofsarah.org. Thanks again to Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs for being here. Thanks for listening. We'll do it in 2 weeks. Thanks to Mike Bowen, our engineer. Susie Check, I screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we talk healthy eating with registered dietitian Emily Horstman. We'll see you then.